Today's Thursday, December 24th, and you're listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. And coming up, millions of COVID-19 vaccines are sitting unused in U.S. hospitals.
The Trump administration promised to vaccinate 20 million Americans by the end of the year, while providing little funding to achieve that goal.
Also ahead, Niger is set for presidential and legislative elections.
From what I've observed, I've seen a lot of preparation on every side of the parties that are going to contest in this election.
Plus, U.S. President Donald Trump has pardoned nearly 50 people. These stories and more are next. Our top story today is breaking news on Brexit. The European Union and Britain have agreed on a post-Brexit trade deal with just days before the UK was to leave one of the world's biggest trade blocs, multiple media outlets reported. A statement from British Prime Minister Boris Johnson's office said, "Deal is done." He said the UK has taken back control of our money, borders, laws, trade, and our fishing waters. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen said the deal was fair, balanced, and right. For more, journalist Henry Ridgewell in London spoke to International Edition's Steve Miller.
The full text has not been published by Britain or by the European Union. The first stage that the leaders of the European Union in Britain have to get over is selling this to the public and selling it to their own constituents and MPs. But the key thing here is to look past the political spin that both sides are putting on the achievement of the deal and to look at the details. We know that fishing has been one of the sticking points in these final few weeks of negotiations. So it will be interesting to see how much European Union fishing boats will still be able to enter British sovereign waters in the future. It will be interesting to see what provisions are in the deal to prevent the British government, for example, giving lots of money to its key industries, to its big companies, to try to make them more competitive against European Union companies. That was one of the major fears of the European Union. And finally, it will be interesting to see who will be the adjudicator in all of this. What sort of mechanisms have been set up in case either side has a dispute in this and claims that the other side is breaking the terms of the agreement, who will be the judge and jury of that?
A lot of attention was focused on the fishery issue and the level playing field concerns. But what else was not included in this deal that still needs to be hammered out?
Despite it running to 2,000 pages, quite a thin deal by what many might have expected 3 or 4 years ago, in that it doesn't cover things like services, financial services, and other aspects of the economic relationship between Britain and the European Union. And those are things that they will want to finesse over the coming months. What it will do is smooth the trade of goods, if you like, because there will be no tariffs on imports or exports on either side. But there will still be checks on the border. But this is something that evolves over time. It's not something that's fixed in time, and there will be plenty of changes in the years ahead.
That's journalist Henry Ridgewell in London speaking to International Edition's Steve Miller. For more on this developing story, please visit voanews.com. Millions of COVID-19 vaccines are sitting unused in U.S. hospitals and elsewhere, a week into the massive inoculation campaign, putting the government's target for 20 million vaccinations this month in doubt. Freddie Joyner of Reuters has more.
1 week into the massive U.S. inoculation campaign, and millions of COVID-19 vaccines sit unused in hospitals and elsewhere, putting the government's target of 20 million vaccinations by the end of the month in doubt. As of Wednesday morning, just 1 million shots of the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine had been given. That was only about one-third of what was first shipped out last week. Over 9.5 million doses of both vaccines, including Moderna's, have now been sent to states, according to the CDC. Hospitals attributed the slow start to preparation of the shots, finding employees to run vaccination clinics, and ensuring proper social distancing before and after vaccinations. The CDC says the low vaccination numbers may simply reflect a lag between vaccination dosing and state reporting. General Gustav Perna, who heads the Trump administration's Operation Warp Speed, echoed that sentiment on Wednesday.
As Dr. Slaughter mentioned earlier, there's a lag in the information as it's collected from all the really thousands of administration sites. And we know that there's probably at least a 72 to 96 hour lag in the information uptake.
The Trump administration promised to vaccinate 20 million Americans by the end of the year, while providing little funding to achieve that goal. That gives them just 9 days to administer nearly 19 million doses, which means vaccinating more than 2 million people a day, including on Christmas.
That's Freddie Joyner of Reuters. Niger is set for presidential and legislative elections on December 27th, which could lead to the country's first democratic transition of power since independence in 1960. The country faces insecurity, corruption, and poverty challenges. For more, I spoke with VOA Hausa Service reporter Mahmoud Lalo.
From what I've observed, I've seen a lot of preparation on every side of the parties that are going to contest in this election. Niamey is wearing a new look. You'll see billboards of presidential candidates all around the city of Niamey, where the presidential candidates posted their big pictures overlooking the entire city. A lot of people, even though they are going about doing their businesses, but right at the back of their mind, they know that on the 27th of December, they're going to go to the polls to elect a new leader. They are ready for this election.
What is at stake in this election?
There are major issues in the minds of voters. What is at stake right now is that people are looking towards issues like the economy, issue of coronavirus, issue of insurgency that has been bedeviling this country for a very long time. I'm sure you know that Niger has a border with Nigeria around Tillaberi and Difa, where Boko Haram insurgents is to overlap into Niger to launch attacks. A lot of the candidates are really out telling their voters that they can take care of these issues regarding economy, insurgency, issue of drought, and what have you. You know, there are also issues of people moving out of Niger to go to places like Algeria, Europe, and other neighboring countries around the continent to look for a greener pasture. These are all issues that are coming up that the candidates are using as a tool to tell their voters that we are going to take care of these issues.
Any security challenges heading up to this election?
So far, even though I've tried to talk to the security officials here, but to no avail, there's little or no fear of any security challenging coming up in this election, because from the campaigns that have been following from all the candidates, I heard them talking about we want a peaceful election. Nobody should go violent. Nobody should raise his hand against his fellow Nigerian citizen. Let's go to the polls, cast our vote, and go back home and wait for the results. No any threat of security. But as far as areas where Tillaberi and Difa are, which borders Nigeria, there is this little fear of a probable attack from Boko Haram insurgents, because what they used to do is they will come into Niger, launch an attack, and then quickly go back into Nigeria, into the bushes. That's what is actually happening, even though officials are still saying that elections are going to take place in those areas and that they've taken all the necessary measures that they need to take to ensure that the election is hedge-free.
Any complaints from especially the opposition, or is everyone having a level playing field when it comes to this election?
Well, there's one complaint that's coming from the opposition side, which is on the 13th of December, there was local government elections, which the result was announced this morning. And all the entire seats were at stake, were taken by the ruling PNDS party. So what the opposition are saying is that there is massive fraud in the election, which they are contesting, because they are exercising this fear of the fact that probably that's what's going to repeat itself in the general election. Therefore, they are calling on the authorities to really look into this issue so that there will be no rigging and what have you regarding the general election that is coming up on December 27th this year.
That's VOA Hausa Service reporter Mahmoud Lalo speaking with me from Niamey. This is the Voice of America. Africa's top public health officials say another variant of the coronavirus appears to have emerged in Nigeria, but further investigation is needed. The discovery could add to a new alarm in the pandemic after similar variants were announced in recent days in Britain and South Africa and sparked the return of travel restrictions. The head of Africa's Center for Disease and Prevention Control says the lineage of the Nigerian mutation is separate. Thailand's government is confident it can contain a major coronavirus resurgence without a national lockdown. The outbreak, mainly among migrant seafood workers, has continued to spread, reaching 27 provinces. Thailand generally has been seen as successful in combating the coronavirus, due partly to its well-regarded public health infrastructure and people's adherence to mask wearing and other protocols. Morocco has imposed a curfew, closed restaurants in major cities, and banned public and private gatherings for 3 weeks to curb the spread of the virus. That includes the usually festive New Year's Eve. The government has ordered all restaurants in the city of Casablanca, Marrakech, and Agadir and Tangier to close immediately for the period. Elsewhere, restaurants, coffee shops, shops, and supermarkets will have to close at 8 p.m. Morocco has reported the highest number of virus cases and deaths in the region and second highest official figures in Africa. You're listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. President Donald Trump has granted pardons or clemency to nearly 50 people this week, including a handful embroiled in the Russian probe. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
Among the dozens of new pardons issued by President Trump, his former campaign manager Paul Manafort and his close associate Roger Stone, who months earlier had his sentence commuted by Trump. Observers say this underscores the president's determination to use his office in the final weeks to unravel the results of special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation. Tuesday, President Trump pardoned two other people convicted in the Russia probe.
U.S. President Donald Trump on Wednesday said he had vetoed the $750 billion National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal 2021, setting up for what could be the first veto ride of his presidency. Gavin O'Gary of Reuters reports.
After refusing to sign Congress's coronavirus relief bill, U.S. President Donald Trump on Wednesday handed lawmakers another lump of coal by vetoing the annual defense spending bill, which has been signed into law every year since 1961. With less than a month left in office, Trump is angry that some Republicans have acknowledged his loss in the November 3rd election to Democrat Joe Biden. Trump said he vetoed the defense policy bill because he objected to liability protections for social media companies unrelated to national security and did not want to rename military bases that are currently named for Confederate generals. Democrats and Republicans appeared united in their objection to Trump's veto. In a statement, Democratic Senator Mark Warner said, quote, "I look forward to overriding the president's fruitless and ridiculous attempt to undermine our national security." Republican Senator Jim Inhofe also blasted Trump's move, saying, quote, "The NDAA has become law every year for 59 years straight because it's absolutely vital to our national security and our troops. This year must not be an exception." Both the Republican-controlled Senate and Democratic-majority House of Representatives passed the 2021 NDAA with margins larger than the two-thirds majorities needed to override a veto, and are expected to do so next week in what would be the first veto override of Trump's presidency.
That's Gavin O'Garay of Reuters. Among the people pardoned by U.S. President Donald Trump this week are four former guards of the military contractor Blackwater, who were convicted by a U.S. court of killing 14 men, women, and children, and wounding 17 others in the so-called Nisour Square massacre in Iraq. In the September 16, 2007 incident, Blackwater guards Nicholas Slatton, Paul Slouch, Evan Liberty, and Dustin Hurd opened fire at a traffic stop with machine guns and grenade launchers on armed Iraqi civilians while trying to clear a path for a convoy of U.S. diplomats. For reaction to the pardons, VOA's Jason Patinkin reached out to Paul Dickinson, a U.S. lawyer who represented some of the survivors of the attack and families of some of those killed in a civil case against Blackwater, which is now known as Academy and is part of the Castellis Corporation.
First of all, what was your reaction to these pardons?
It was exactly opposite of my reaction when the four men were convicted. To let you know what my thoughts were then was that the legal system had worked, and these men who committed these atrocities against innocent civilians were held accountable for their actions. And the pardons took all that away. And it took it away from the victims as well, who relied on the U.S. justice system to get some fair justice for what happened against them. They must feel lost and abandoned now by the U.S. government, who had promised them that they were going to hold people accountable.
And let's look at the victims. Who were some of the victims that you represented?
I represented six victims of the shooting that day. Blackwater's youngest victim was 9-year-old Ali Kanani, who was shot in the head in the backseat of his father's SUV. There was a 70-year-old farmer, Abraham Al-Karim, who had seven kids, was in a public bus, was shot in the head also. There was a 25-year-old taxi driver who was working, supporting his parents and siblings, who was shot through the back as Blackwater shot down into cars.
The AP reports that the lawyer for one of the convicted men, Paul Slough, said that the four men, quote, didn't deserve to spend 1 minute in prison, end quote. A lawyer for Evan Liberty, another one of the four men, said that the four of them are innocent and that the pardon was completely justified. How do you respond to those statements?
The criminal legal system worked for these four men. Six men were originally indicted. Those indictments were dismissed on New Year's Eve of 2009. So what the court said was, you have to start over, Justice Department and FBI. And the FBI completely started over their investigation, re-interviewed witnesses, regathered evidence, presented all of that evidence to new prosecutors, who then started a new prosecution process. Those men were tried and convicted. Some of those claims were reversed by the Court of Appeals. And in fact, Nicholas Slatton, who was the one that was convicted of murder, his conviction was overturned and he was retried and convicted again. Now, some people might think that this is extraordinary efforts to try and get convictions on these people. What it shows me, however, is that the criminal justice system was working for these men, ensuring that they got fair trials.
The statement from the White House on these pardons describes the incident as follows. It says, quote, "The situation turned violent, which resulted in the unfortunate deaths and injuries of Iraqi civilians," end quote. And it goes on to allege that one of the Iraqi investigators involved may have had ties to insurgent groups. What do you think of that?
First, I'll start with the last thing. The Iraqi investigator that was involved, who I am familiar with, was not involved in the investigation any more than turning over some physical evidence that he had and directing the FBI as to where to find witnesses. Whether he was or was not involved with any insurgent groups, I think, is irrelevant to whether or not any evidence that was gathered by the FBI was somehow not proper evidence, because it was. Regarding whether or not this was something that was started by somebody else, the evidence is, I understand, is crystal clear that the first shots that were fired by the Blackwater guards. There was a white Kia that was being driven by a medical student. His mother, who was a physician, was in the passenger seat. When they came to the traffic circle, was right about the time that the four tan-colored armored vehicles that were driven by Blackwater came through the wrong direction in the traffic circle, stopped in front of him. They held up their fists, which was the sign in Baghdad for traffic to stop. My understanding is he may not have stopped immediately. And when that happened, the Blackwater guards immediately started firing into the vehicle, launched a rocket-fired grenade into the vehicle, which exploded. Their vehicle caught on fire. They were burned alive inside.
And this isn't Trump's first pardon of convicted American war criminals. He's also pardoned personnel convicted for war crimes in Afghanistan. What do you think of what at this point appears to be a pattern of Trump pardoning convicted American war criminals?
I mean, these pardons are different than the pardons of Flynn and Manafort and Stone. I mean, if you want to put those aside and say they were political pardons, you know, I can deal with that. I can understand that. Okay. But these four men and the others that you're talking about, these are convicted criminals of violent crimes, war crimes. And so the difference is that the message this sends to other nations is that we might not do what we say we're going to do, and we certainly didn't in this case, which is ensure that people are held accountable for war crimes that they commit abroad.
That's Paul Dickinson, a U.S. lawyer who represented some of the survivors of the attack and families of some of those killed in a civil case against Blackwater, speaking with my colleague Jason Patinkin in Washington. Defense attorneys and their supporters say the men returned fire after being fired on first in what they said was an ambush. Police body camera footage of a black man being fatally shot by a Columbus, Ohio police officer has been released. AP correspondent Tim McGuire reports.
Columbus, Ohio police officer Adam Coy did not activate his body camera before a fatal shooting early Tuesday morning. A six-second clip of that shooting was captured by an automatic look-back feature. There was no audio. The clip shows Andre Hill, a 47-year-old black man, walking out of a garage, cell phone in his hand. Seconds later, he's shot. After that, Coy turns on the camera.
Get your hand off from underneath you now! We got a medic coming.
Hill lay groaning on the garage floor, no officer coming to his aid. Columbus Mayor Andrew Ginther wants Coy fired.
Coy failed on two directives, not turning on the body-worn camera and failing to offer aid after the shooting.
The State Bureau of Investigation has opened a case. The U.S. Attorney's Office in Columbus will review for possible federal civil rights violations once the state completes its investigation. I'm Tim McGuire.
Thailand's Manas Sivat has been a rescue worker for 26 years. During that time, he's been called to many accident scenes and had to perform cardiopulmonary resuscitation, or CPR. But until recently, he's never had to do so on an elephant. VOA's Jeff Custer has this story.
Mana was off duty and on a road trip this past Sunday when he was called into action. He got the call that a baby elephant had been struck by a motorcycle while crossing a road with a group of wild pachyderms in an eastern Thai province. In a video that went viral on social media, Mana is seen giving two-handed compressions to a small elephant lying on its side. His colleagues, just a few meters away, treated the dazed and injured motorcycle rider on the road. Despite having dealt with dozens of road traffic accidents involving humans during a more than two-decade career, Mana said the elephant was the only victim he's revived by administering CPR. The elephant stood up after about 10 minutes and was taken to another location for care before being returned to the scene of the accident in the hopes of being reunited with its mother. Mana said the other elephant soon returned when the mother heard her baby calling out. Both the rider and elephant were recovering and neither had serious injuries. Jeff Custer, VOA News.
A provisional court in Pakistan has ordered the release of a British-born Pakistani man charged in the 2002 murder of American journalist Daniel Pearl. The provisional court's order overturns a Supreme Court decision that Ahmed Omar Saeed Sheikh should remain in custody. He was acquitted of murdering Pearl earlier this year, but has been held while Pearl's family appeals the acquittal. The family's lawyer said Sheikh will be freed until the appeal is finished. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, our colleague, Jason Patinkin, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Gene Lowe from Washington. Thank you so much for listening and have a great evening.
Moderator Michael Williams and a panel of Washington experts as they analyze the top news stories of the week, including U.S. Congress is set to act on a $900 billion COVID-19 relief package to businesses, individuals, and resources for vaccines. Don't miss Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hi, this is Victor Beatty, Managing Editor of VOA News. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source.